Music in Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today we have a guest who is tailor-made for this podcast. His name is Jesse Hubbard, and he can be found behind the stick at Rye River Social in Columbus, Ohio. But he just put out a book called Punk Rock and Cocktails. I mean, right? He's long been putting out cocktails based on or inspired by punk rock songs that he absolutely loves and bands that he loves. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his various war wounds that he's gotten while in the pit. We'll talk about his time as a DJ in New York City and a whole lot more. So sit down and relax. Maybe grab yourself something to drink. You know, even though it's punk rock, doesn't mean you just have to drink beer. I'd recommend some rye. And let's talk about punk rock and cocktails.
All that stuff, just let people know a little something about you to kick us off.
For sure, yeah. So I'm Jesse Hubbard. I work as the bar lead at a bar called Rye River Social in Columbus, Ohio. And I am the author of Punk Rock and Cocktails, which is available now.
Now, how long have you been plotting this book?
Well, I feel like the people in my inner circle have been plotting that for me a lot longer than I have. You know what I mean?
That's totally valid.
Yeah. So
like, you're full nerd, so you got to do this.
Exactly. You know, it was just something that I've always wanted to do. It's been a dream, a lifelong goal.
Yeah.
But then it's that imposter syndrome that kind of sets in.
Right.
You say to yourself, why would anybody care? Who cares? Who cares about my book? And then people, you know, the people that love you and care about you, oh, like, well, we care. Well, yeah, you care. But why would somebody, you know, in LA or in the UK or in Canada or Mexico or whatever, why would they care?
Yeah.
Because there's so many cocktail books out there and it's easy. I'm a collector of cocktail books and I like to read them, but it's easy for one to get lost amongst the masses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was trying to think of a really cool niche, and I have a background in radio. I'm a lifelong music lover, fanatic, I guess you could say. I grew up in the punk scene and the idea just kind of clicked. And when I sat back and thought about it, the concept was really always right there in front of me. If I just would have stopped and got out of my own way and accepted that. And once I sat down, I started writing some of these stories about these bands and these albums that matter to me so much. It just started coming out so easily. You know, it just, the writing, and I've never written a book before. I've contributed to a couple magazines here and there, little bit pieces, but I'm not an author. In my mind, I'm not a writer. So this was something that was really scary for me. And the big thing that really, aside from, you know, my family and friends really supporting me, the thing that really kind of cemented that maybe I'm onto something here was when I started reaching out to the bands to get their okay to include their artwork and their name and everything. And the excitement that I got back from, and the feedback from some of these bands really got me excited. I'm like, all right, if they're excited, people don't need to know me, right? Yeah. They know these bands. And they might be, they might buy it based on Henry Rollins or Lucero or the Bouncing Souls or whoever being in this. So that's kind of the background, and you know, and here we are. It's kind of exceeded my expectations a little bit. So it's I'm really happy with it.
Well, you know, what's kind of funny is that I've been doing this podcast for about 3 years, and my intention when I started, I have a radio background as well, so we'll have to nerd out about that.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, we got radio voice. I mean, mine's a little phlegmy at the moment, but sometimes that's better. Depends who you ask.
Right.
But, you know, I have always, when I was a little kid, I had a stereo that was way above my 8-year-old quality. You know, I should not have had such a good stereo, but my parents were like, she's the first kid, give her this. And then it just got passed down. But yeah, I did radio. I, you know, knew so many musicians, and I've seen, which I'm sure you've seen too, in that world, a lot of the people who work in the music world kind of transition over, and a lot of people go into hospitality. They wind up like chefs and bartenders. And I would have friends that suddenly were becoming these rock star bartenders. And I'm like, have you ever made a cocktail named after one of your songs? Or did your music infuse the drinks that you're making? And surprisingly, they didn't that often. Sometimes, well, one time I decided to do a whole menu based off Radiohead, you know, but not as often as I would have expected. So when this came along, when I saw this, I'm like, oh, here's my dream bartender right here, because it sounds like every drink he's ever made is related to music somehow.
pretty much. You know, I mean, you know, it's a huge source of inspiration for me.
Yeah. So, well, let's throw back to when you first started bartending. Let's go back there. Sure. So when and why, how did you get into it?
So I bartended briefly in college, but it was more beer tending, you know, shots and beers you know, nothing complicated at all. And if somebody would have come in and asked for an actual classic cocktail, I probably would have been terrified. when I really started getting more serious into it, it was the worlds of my radio background and bartending kind of crossed over one another. Mm-hmm. I was working in New York for K-Rock at the time. And I know there's a K-Rock out your way too, which unfortunately my K-Rock no longer exists, which kind of leads into how I got into bartending.
Some could say the same about our K-Rock.
well played. Yeah. So I was with K-Rock. It was a dream job. You know, I was a part of something that I was really excited to get up and go to work every day to do. Yeah. And I did a little bit of everything there. I started off in promotions, eventually got to do some on-air stuff, some production. You know, I was really working my way up, but I wasn't making any real money. So
radio.
If you don't know, now you know.
Yep.
So I started serving at a place in Princeton, New Jersey at the time, because I was living in Jersey and I couldn't afford to live in New York at the time. And you know, eventually I started bugging the bartenders a little bit to learn how to do some of the stuff that they were doing. You know, how do you make that cocktail? Why do you do this? Why do you do that? I started reading more up on it and watching videos, and just really kind of, I was intrigued by it, because as you know, what often happens in radio, the format changed from K-Rock to what was called Now FM at the time, Top 40. And, you know, music is really popular for a lot of people, but it's not why I went out there. That wasn't my thing. And I went out there for, you know, like Soundgarden and you know, and Black Sabbath and that kind of stuff. And next thing you know, it's like Black Eyed Peas and Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And it was like, a totally
where are the guitars, man?
there was no guitars. So I started really working more and more as a bartender. And I stayed in radio for probably another 3 years or so. But it got to the point where I started working less in radio, going down to maybe like weekend, overnight, something like that. And I started managing bars. And it was that crossroads where I was doing something that gave me a creative outlet the more I got into the craft cocktails. And it was fun. It was engaging. And it was there was a lot of similarities between the two worlds of being a DJ or a producer and you know, that's on air, and being behind the stick and really engaging with your guests. So that kind of 2008, 2009 was whenever that really started to take place.
Yeah. I mean, that's something, and since, you know, you were in radio at that time, I think it was deregulation happened in 96, and that was when you started losing identity at radio stations, you know? And it's interesting what you're saying. You know, one thing that you had at radio when you were a kid was even if you were listening to the alternative rock station, you still knew this DJ liked Soundgarden a little more than the other DJs. You know, DJ sort of had a leaning that, although you learn later that they're kind of required to play a certain template of music, they can pepper in some stuff that's closer to their hearts. And so you get a sense of who that DJ was. You know, this DJ is kind of into Britpop, you know, you could tell that or something.
Sure.
But that all went away. You know, the identity kind of got lost in a lot of radio. But I think when you're, what you're saying too with the bartending, you get over there and you can get that identity back, you know, because there's so much more of that person to person connection.
Exactly. Yeah. Well said. And that's one of the reasons I love doing, you know, podcasts. And it's one of the reasons that I went back and I listened to a bunch of yours, your shows. And it's one of the reasons I love,
you're like, she just talks a lot. Got it.
You know, your podcast is so rad. It's that personality and that identity that is missing in radio now, you know, and that's why I love doing these. They're so much fun, and yours in particular. So that's nicely done. Yeah.
Hey, well, you've got a podcast too. Right? Are you starting one at least? You've had like one or two episodes.
We're just getting off the ground with it. Yeah. We've only released one episode so far, and we've got some other ones that we're kind of tweaking as we speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't consider it competition. We need more music and booze out there, and you're doing music and booze. So talk about it. But you're focusing more on like the album art. Is that what it is? Or you're taking one album? What's the name of your podcast? Tell us about your podcast.
So the podcast, I do it with, I co-host it with Greg Hansberry, who is still in the radio world. He's a producer for a lot of radio stations here in Columbus, Ohio. And he reached out to me because I did a podcast that he produced. And we were talking about the book in the early stages of, hey, I'm doing this thing. It might be out next year, yada, yada, yada. And he reached out to me, and he's since become a really good friend. He goes, hey man, I think you're really onto something there. Have you ever considered doing a podcast? Well, it would be kind of cool to get, you know, back behind a microphone and do some stuff, but I haven't really thought about it. He goes, No, you're doing a podcast. I said, okay, cool. But you're going to co-host it with me. You're not just going to produce it. You're going to co-host it with me. We're going to do it together. And it's a very similar concept. So it doesn't focus strictly on punk rock, but just a broader spectrum of, you know, like we were saying, does it have a guitar? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If it's rock and roll in any way, shape or form, mm-hmm. We call it rock tales, as in tales of rock and roll, rock tales and cocktails. And we did our first episode about Tom Petty and his album Full Moon Fever.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we're working on, the next one coming out is going to be Dropkick Murphys, The Warrior's Code. After that, we're doing Springsteen and Neil Young and all this kind of stuff. So what we're thinking about doing is we've got the first season all worked out where we're just going to be me and him. But the second season, we're going to have people on to kind of do guest cocktails or whatever. And you've got to come on the second season. and you know, we're gonna figure out a way to make that happen. Okay,
I'll come up with something.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, obviously, I love that. And when I first was going to do this, you know, I was like, yeah, I want to do this podcast. It's gonna be basically music and booze with Mo, but we need to come up with a good name. And Rocktails was one of the names that one of my friends came up with. And I was just like, I don't know, because it's not always just gonna be rock and roll, because you know, it depends on who I talked to. And you know, over the course of this, I've talked to people who were Broadway singers, you know, they were like theatrically trained, you know, there's like the prog people, and you know, some people were just or you know, someone in Puerto Rico, everything about them, they're all salsa, it's all this. So I was like, I'm glad I didn't put myself there. But you know, I love that you guys are doing, because you're pairing things up, and I think that's so much fun. I love that you're doing it. I can't wait to be listening to them as well.
Yeah, thanks. It's but fun, like, and it's challenging to try to come up with so many new cocktails inspired by certain albums.
Well, let's talk about, like, because you're bartending and you're already a music nerd. You worked in radio. You've been a music nerd your whole life. So I can't even say, when did you first become a music nerd? Because I'm like you, don't remember a time without that nerddom in my world. Did you ever play an instrument?
Yeah, I mean, I play guitar. I was in a couple like shitty bands.
I've got a guitar back there, if you can see it.
I do actually.
See a little bit. There you go.
There it is. Nice.
I pick it up every once in a while. I can't do shit on it, but.
Well, you know what? As long as you're having fun and you're making noise, that's all that matters.
Yeah, right? Totally, totally. I've dated a bunch of musicians. that's the pitfall. That's the pitfall I fell into until I married a painter. So
that's funny. But, still an artist, though.
I know. Still an artist. Still an artist. But that's hilarious. It's kind of like when you first started bartending, when did you become like in charge? You know, at what point were you able to, I shouldn't say in charge. When were you making your own cocktails? When did you start being able to?
Yeah. The first time that I did a full menu, so I had gotten cocktails that I on the menu before and stuff, and I was, you know, I started, I worked in, you know, like I said, I was a restaurant manager as early back as 2003, 2004, but I wasn't really bartending at the time. I was really just managing, and while I was in school, and you know, and a little bit on the, you know, so like the hospitality industry has always kind of went, you know, parallel with my life in radio, like off and on. I need to make some more money. I go do this, right?
Jump over there.
And but I started getting, the first time I did my full cocktail menu by myself was probably about 8 or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. The full menu by myself, and it was, I remember how nerve-wracking it was.
I'm sure. You
know, just doubting yourself, like, oh my god, are these approachable enough? Are they craft enough? Will people like them? Do they taste good? Are they balanced? And I, because you know what you like.
Yeah.
But are other people going to like it? And it was well received. And, you know, there's some things I would definitely have done differently looking back, but you grow and you improve and you always try to stay on top of your game.
Now, were they music based at that time too? Or were you feeling like I got to be in this crafty cocktail-y world? And
yeah, you know? I mean, I've always done that kind of stuff. I it wasn't the first menu that I did. It was one of the early menus that I did though. I did a Bruce Springsteen themed cocktail that I called Badlands. Mm-hmm. And I did an Iggy Pop themed cocktail called Gimme Danger.
It's always been there.
Yeah, it's always been there. And, you know, the Bruce Springsteen thing was kind of a riff on like a Manhattan, which is like, you know, a classic New York East Coast cocktail, of course. And then the Iggy Pop one, I don't remember specifically what was in it, but I remember that it was really spicy and hot and had peppers in it and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It was like, give me danger. And I have it written down somewhere.
Well, this is so great because you not only talk about your relationship with the band, you know, you've got, here's this band, here's this album, this is why it means a lot to me, and I wanted to create a drink that reflected it in this way. It's like essays, not really essays because it's only a couple paragraphs for each one, but it's so thoughtful about why you chose this band and this album and then how you developed the drinks. So then I'm flipping through and I'm looking at stuff and I'm all, okay, well, here's this. Oh, now there's a fancy ingredient. Oh, wait, there's another fancy ingredient. So I kind of have to laugh because I'm like, okay, you got all these like punk rock and roll things. And then you made them fancy.
I did.
What you elevating these kids for? So now because I'm a bar nerd and I have a pretty decent home bar, I can probably do some of these, but I was like, okay, I'm looking at the remedy right now. And I've got Angel's Envy. Thank God I just bought a bottle of that. I can make brown sugar syrup. I've got Carpano Antica. I've got walnut bitters. I've got Peychaud's. I'm like, I've got everything for this one. Whew, that's one of the few where I'm like, I actually have everything here. Smoked applewood, I don't have that.
You can go to like Target and get it. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
it's easy to get.
That's my gotta give you gentle shit for doing a punk rock book and then making the drinks a little complicated. So
I had to.
Explain to me why you're ornery like this.
So, because, you know, this is in a sense, it's kind of my story and my relationship with these bands and these albums.
Yeah.
And this is what I do. And this is the best way that I could pay tribute to these albums that matter so much to me is to make the cocktails the absolute best they could be. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to dumb anything down. I didn't want to make it too easy. When I go to a punk show, I've got a PBR, a High Life in hand, and a shot of whiskey. I get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I get it. I'm not going to the bar and ordering something with like a cheese infusion into the gin, right? Or whatever, you know, or coffee, whatever. I'm not doing that. But, you know, I wanted to kind of maybe hopefully teach some new techniques to folks. Mm-hmm. Right. A big one that people tease me about is the minor threat one. I was like, what is it? Cranberry juice or a Diet Coke?
I know. Totally. That's got to be a no ABV drink.
Yeah, it's low ABV. So, you know, the idea is I want to, you know, and my friends are kind of teasing me about it too. It's like, you know, a really fancy cocktail is not something people are going to be drinking at a punk show. No, it's not. But what I'm hoping is that people will get together and they'll play some of these records. Maybe there's a band in here they don't know. They'll check them out. They'll make some of these cocktails together. You buy this ingredient, I'll buy that ingredient. You got to go to the store to get this stuff. And it's a social thing that you're doing on a Friday or a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Or if you're in the bar industry, you're doing it on a Sunday or Monday night.
You know? I was going to say, once bars get going again, do you hope to have like a listening party at your home bar, like your punk rock listening party with all of this? You know, you could put together a playlist and a drinking menu.
We did that. A book release and a signing. Mm-hmm. In the very end of March, and we did it socially distance, mm-hmm. which was still fun though. We did the playlist, we did a listening party, we did a little mini cocktail menu. But we're going to do another one up in Cleveland. A buddy of mine is also putting out a different type of a book, and we're going to do like a dual book signing party type thing or whatever, which is going to be super fun. So as the bars get back going, I hope to maybe make some rounds and do maybe like a little mini tour with people that I know in different cities. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was talking to some of the bands about maybe setting up like merch tables at some of their shows and they start doing them again and stuff. And
you know, it'd be interesting if I'm thinking about the current to-go cocktail culture, how long that will last. I mean,
yeah,
I knock on wood, it sticks around. I think it's been handy for everyone. And as bars recover, you know, during this time, it's another little lifeline you can throw out. But it's almost like, you know, can you put together little cocktail kits or something that the bands can market for you or something, you know, stuff like that. Cause obviously you got permission from all the bands. So you had to send them, if they want to try the drink, you're going to have to teach them how to do some of this stuff, right? Well,
it's cool. I've been talking to some of the guys in some of the bands, and they've been like, yeah, we're going to the store tomorrow to pick up some of this stuff. Me and my wife are going to make this, mm-hmm. you know, we're really excited. Tom May from the Menzingers, they posted a thing on, he asked me, he's like, hey, is it cool if I make this cocktail and post it on our Instagram? I was like, hell yeah, that'd be the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, no shit.
He did that on the Menzingers Instagram. He did this little montage where he's making the cocktail and he's playing the song that it's kind of inspired by. And I was like, oh, that was amazing. And that got me so many sales.
Oh, I'm sure. Cause it's just kind of like, since you have the band's backing, I'm like, dude, they can help your ass out on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I always ask, when I do these interviews, like when you're home, if you're sitting at home having a drink, you know, what are you drinking? What are you listening to? And I almost feel like most bartenders don't go to this length to make some of these. Well, these cocktails aren't super complicated. You just might have like a fancy syrup in there or a fancy something or smoke this.
But some are a little bit easier than others. Sure.
Yes, for sure. So I don't know if I can ask you that question, because I'm assuming, oh, well, you're going to listen to, you know, Minor Threat and listen to, you know, this song. You're going to, you know, is it going to be stuff from your book, or when you're at home, are you just sitting there chilling with like just a shot and whatever record, you know?
I mean, I've got a pretty extensive record collection, and I don't only listen to punk rock, you know, yes, like my first, I love Motown. I love blues. I love like funk and soul. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my musical heroes, like my idol was Bruce Springsteen, mm-hmm. you know? And then that's a big one. I like listening to, so my earliest memories of music is listening to rock and roll with my dad, mm-hmm. listening to Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen and Zeppelin and the Doors and Steely Dan and those kind of bands, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So often I'll find myself putting on something a little bit more chill at the end of a night. If I just like get off work and I want to listen to a record and it's not super late, I'll go home and I'll just like pour myself a shot of something. Like maybe like, you know, I love Old Granddad 114. Mm-hmm. That's one of my go-tos, right? I'll pour myself a little shot of that or, you know, whatever I've got going on at the bar at the time, mm-hmm. at my home bar. And I'll put on some Springsteen, some chill Springsteen, and I'll just kind of listen to just like mm-hmm. that kick back. Maybe I'll have
wind down.
Yeah, wind down. You know, like I love craft beer, but at that particular time of the night, I'm probably doing like a Pilsner mm-hmm. or something, you know, and just kind of keep it real simple.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's a night out in the town, I went out with some friends the other night. We went up to Cleveland and we went out to the cocktail bars and we, you know, try all the nice fancy cocktails. There's a time and a place for everything, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but these now have these drinks in the book. There's 20 cocktails here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you create these specifically for this book, or did they exist before on various menus of yours and you're like, oh, I made another drink named after a band again or for a band again, because you have been doing this for a while. So
two exist already.
I was gonna say, is this a greatest hits collection of past drinks, or did you actually do
only two of them existed.
Wow.
And that the Lucero Noon as Dark as Midnight existed, and that put that on a menu once upon a time. And actually had that in a competition and it did quite well.
Nice.
And what's the other one? The Room with a View, which is the Corey Brannan cocktail. And that's another one that I had on the menu and I did in the competition, and I won a competition with that one. So I figured, awesome. You know, they've got to be in the book, and they were already inspired by these guys in a way.
Yeah.
So it just kind of took off from there. But the rest of them, and that was the most time consuming part of the book. The stories were easy because I'm writing these little stories about my experience with them, you know, short stories, but really making the cocktail to where I felt that it represented the band and what I've been telling people. And I think it makes sense, but this is the best way I can put it. The cocktail, I try to make the cocktail look and taste like the record makes me feel, or like the record sounds to me. You know what I mean? Taste, scent, you know, sight, you know, all of these things, these different senses, and how does it kind of relay back to this band? And, you know, for example, the Lucero one, it's whiskey, it's bourbon. You know, you can't do that and not have bourbon in it. You can do that band.
Oh my God, that's awesome. I love that.
The bands are what draw people in.
And that's maybe the focus that you needed.
Yeah, maybe for volume two, it's like, oh, I remember that guy that did that thing. I'm going to check out volume two now.
Well, you could do a funk one.
Sure.
So kind of related to this. So this is where I wanted to go before. And thank you for reminding me. You said that, you know, you reached out to get the permission to use the album covers, to reach out to the band. So I'm sure in some cases this puts you in very close proximity to the band themselves, like maybe Messengers, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, I know sometimes they've got like a publicist or something that's just going to respond to you and say, yeah, that's good to go. So has this changed your relationship with some of these bands? Like, yeah, I mean, do you have any of these now, any other bands here who are now like your friends or your online friends, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, like online friends for sure. You know,
like, are they going to put you on the guest list the next time they come to tour?
Very possible. There are two guys that, you know, that I knew prior. So I knew Brian from the Bounty and Souls. Mm-hmm. He did some tattoo work for me because he's got a tattoo parlor in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Cool.
So I'd met him. I knew him. I had a little bit of an online, you know, kind of like friendship with him already. So it was easy just to hit him up and be like, hey, man, I'm doing this thing. Is it cool if I, you know, he's like, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. James from a band called the Gay Blades. They're another Jersey band.
Yes.
Probably one of the lesser known bands in the book, but one of my favorite bands. So I definitely wanted to give them some love and include them. And he's somebody else that was just an easy, you know, message to like, hey, you know, what do you think? He's like, go for it.
Yeah.
As far as everybody else, you know, it was most of them I dealt with members of the band themselves. Mm-hmm. A couple publicists here and there, you know, a couple management companies, but, you know, probably 17, 18 out of the 20 were dealing directly with band members. So it's definitely been cool to develop that relationship. And I've gotten to be pretty friendly with some of the guys, you know, in these bands, you know, to the point where, you know, I don't know if they're going to put me on the guest list, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of them did offer to do it.
Yeah, you know? Totally. It's
really cool. So, you know, I've gotten to be pretty friendly with Tom, and like, I want to meet up with them next time, you know, from the Menzingers, like I was saying, next time they come into town, and I'm going to bring them some to-go cocktails.
Totally.
You know,
right.
Which is cool. Right. And, you know, like, some of the, you know, like Corey Brannan and BJ Barnum from American Aquarium and, Ken from the Dropkick Murphys, you know, I've got like a fun dialogue going on with them. And it's just really fun for me because these are people that I admire and they're super stoked to get this book, you know, that, and Frank Turner was just a sweetheart of a guy about it. And I've chatted with him a little bit. And it's just really cool to me that some of them seem so excited about my little book, where to me, there are these legendary musicians that have been putting out inspirational art, you know, for many, many years.
Right. And I always look at it as I can't make that art. So I'll try to do what I can to support that art. Right.
Yes.
And, you know, you've made these cocktails for them in homage, you know, to the album, to this, and talked about your feelings. And, you know, that's what I think is really great. Like you were saying, you wanted to make a drink that reflects how you feel about that album and that song and that band. And that gives people something they can latch onto, you know, because everyone has feelings about a song, some sort of song. Everybody can relate to that. So it's, you know, I was looking through this and it comes, it's all rock and roll looking, punk rock and cocktails. It's like a scribble on a wall. But then you read the little, your stories, and they're so sincere and heartfelt. And I, you know, not like I was expecting you to be like, fuck yeah, I went to this show and broke my wrist and blah, blah, blah. You know, of course, there's some of that too. You can't not go to a punk rock show.
A little bit of that.
Lots of punk rock shows and not come out with some sort of war wounds, right? I broke my foot at a show one time. I totally get it. But it's, you know, it's, you expect it to be all of that. And it's not. The book has a lot of these like heartfelt memories and emotional ties and things like that, that make it almost kind of nostalgic too. And I think anybody can kind of relate to that. And it's great that you were able to get this across. And I'm sure to those bands, that must mean so much that their art in like affected someone in such a way that they created art for them, you know? So they should all be your friends.
You're right. No, I appreciate you saying that. It means a lot. And that's something for me that, you know, there are books out there in the world that exist that have albums and cocktails in them. I'm not the first person to do this.
Yeah.
By any means. But I haven't really seen anything, you know, most of what I've seen, it was like, here's a little bit of a bio about this band and here's a cocktail with it, which is super cool. I haven't really seen anything that shared such personal stories. And I had these stories, and that's why it was something that I thought was a little bit unique in a world that, you know, what hasn't already been done in music and or cocktails.
It's true. It's a lot more personal, and in making it more personal like that, it's a lot more relatable. Do you remember what your first concert was?
Well, I do. When I was a kid, my mom and dad sent my brother and myself to see the Temptations.
Ooh, that's cool.
It was pretty cool. Yeah.
My dad took me to see the Osmonds. So, right. Oh, it was great. I loved Donny Osmond when I was six. So. It's perfect. What about the first concert that you went to without your parents? That's probably a more valid one.
My own money as a teenager, I went to Ozfest 1999.
Oh, 1999. Was Allison Chain still around then? No.
Lane already passed. No, Lane didn't pass yet. He didn't pass yet, but they weren't there. But it was who was there? Like Rob Zombie and System of a Down.
Oh my God, your brain must have just first been breaking. Blown.
I honestly, I don't remember. It was Black Sabbath was together. Mm-hmm. It was really fun.
Wow.
We ended up getting a little rowdy and got kicked out of the concert. I'll never forget it. We weren't completely innocent bystanders, but we weren't as involved as they made it out to be.
Right.
but we got kicked out during the headliner, so we got to see everybody.
You were like, it's okay. Those are old guys anyway. That's so great. But see, it's great to hear stories like that, and people love that. And I love that you've made it tangible in this cocktail-y kind of way. I mean, it's interesting and fun. And I hope it inspires what you think it will for people to like, listen to the record and have the drink, you know, because they'll think about it in another way.
Yeah, that would mean a lot to me if, even more than the cocktails, even if people don't make the cocktails, I think it would mean more to me if there's a band in here that you don't know.
Yeah.
And I can turn you on to that band.
I've never heard of Gayblades until I saw this. And I was just like, because
check them out, they're rad.
Yeah. So I'm totally intrigued by all. I mean, I knew a lot of the stuff in here already, but
I'm sure you did. Most of them, you probably knew every other band besides them.
I'm like, I have to look again, but yeah, you're right. but that's totally fine because that doesn't mean I own these records or the song that you based the cocktail on, you know? So it's almost like I was thinking he probably already has this. I'll put together a Spotify playlist of each song that each cocktail is for. You know, awesome. and learn that, but because it's always fun to learn, you always have stuff to learn with music, always, you know, and not everybody has the whole album or anything. So anytime I recognize a fellow nerd in both drink and music, I'm like, one of us. So what, were there any, I figure there must've been some that didn't make the cut that's, you know, maybe for part two or maybe for a drink menu down the road? Do you have any that you were like, it was so close?
Well, the white whale for me that I have not been able to get a hold of is Iggy Pop. Mm-hmm. I want to do it because of, you know, I already have an Iggy Pop cocktail that I've done.
Yeah.
I've done two, actually.
The
spicy one. But I've done another one.
What was the other one?
Yeah, called the Passenger. It's like this fig infused rye whiskey thing. It's delicious. It's delicious. And so I've got two ready to go. That's how much the man inspires me. But I just cannot find out how to get a hold of him. He's impossible to get a hold of. And so he's the white whale. But I'll give you a sneak preview of some of the bands that I've got coming up that I've already got the okay from for volume two. I'm really excited. Yeah. So we're going to have Rancid. We're going to have Against Me, Gaslight Anthem, Mighty Mighty Ballstones, Flogging Molly. It's going to be rad.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Well, when I was in radio, it was in the Bay Area in the 90s. So.
Oh, there you go.
So I was like, so I knew Lint.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
I haven't talked to him in a zillion years. And whenever someone's like, oh, you know Lint? Or I said, oh, you know Lint. I mean, Tim Armstrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew him as Lint for the longest.
He's Lint first, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But that was during that time. And I've always had such a soft spot. Well, of course I was an Op Ivy kid. So I lived around the corner from Gilman Street when I lived.
That's awesome.
Right. So it was just like, you just went there and got sweaty and gross and saw such great bands and had such a good time. It was such a wonderful venue. So you're familiar with it. For anyone listening who's not familiar with 924 Gilman Street, it's basically all ages punk rock venue. No one signed to a major label was allowed to play there. And it was run by a co-op, still is run by a co-op, collective board. Yeah, it's a group of like, I don't know, 20 people. You know, they were always very inclusive. That was, you know, I remember seeing Pansy Division there. It was kind of like, you know, because they were like LGBTQA bands, you know, girl punk bands, boy punk bands. It didn't matter. Do you play punk rock? Are you on a major label? You know, are you not on a major label?
You're right.
You know, so it was almost more like it felt like a house party with really stinky bathrooms. Well, I guess any kind of co-op would have stinky bathrooms, but yeah.
That's awesome though. See, I love hearing those kind of stories. Like I'm jealous.
Yeah.
That's
well, cool. What was your punk rock youth then? I mean,
So
where
for
were
me,
you living?
What's that?
Where were you living?
So part of my childhood was in New Jersey. Then we moved out to Ohio. Then I went back to Jersey when I was, you know, in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was the Court Tavern in New Brunswick, New Jersey. That is, so I was just a little bit, I just missed out on my CB, like the real CBGBs, just because I was a little bit too young.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't quite old enough. So if the Court Tavern for me was, that's where, you know, the Gaslight Anthem kind of broke, you know, the Bouncing mm-hmm. Souls would play there, Get Up Kids, you mm-hmm. know, those kind of bands, and they would come through, you know, like the old school punk bands, like the Addicts and UK Subs would come in and play there.
Yeah.
And they had, it was just this little basement where they could fit maybe like on a good day, 400 people down there.
Oof.
And so that was kind of where, you know, I cut my teeth, you know, as one of my favorite venues. And then here in Columbus was Newport Music Hall. Mm-hmm. You know, they say it's the oldest continuously running music hall in the country. And they've had everybody from, you know, like AC/DC back in the day to, mm-hmm. You know, like you're talking about Danzig and the Misfits and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So those are the two venues that really kind of did it for me, where I was able to see all the punk bands, you know, and then a million basement shows that, you know, house shows and stuff, you know, it is.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I remember seeing the Toy Dolls in the 80s at a YMCA. In San Diego. I'm trying to remember who was with them, because I grew up with a bunch of guys, so we went and I just stood off to the side because I'm like, yeah, I don't need to get in that mosh pit, because there was another band on the bill that was equally cool, but I just remember Toy Dolls were just funny and rowdy. I'm like, this band is really silly but also completely rowdy, how does this work, you know?
Right, yeah
all the guys just slamming into each other. I'm like, I'm just gonna stand over here because I just don't feel like getting beat up today. It's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday at the YMCA, so
that's how I am now. Like I used to be down there right in the thick of it, but now I'm like the older punk in the back, just kind of like, all right, this is cool.
You're like standing at the, like in the rear of the pit with your arms crossed, just like this, right? That's how you watch shows now.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, I've seen those guys. I'm usually standing next to those guys because I'll still be close enough to the pit that I get bounced around a little bit. But those guys are the wall that keeps me from falling down. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I guess I'm the wall now.
Yep. Well, congratulations on putting this book out. I am so excited. I mean, when it came, it's been sitting on my table for weeks. I'm like, I got to do this, make some of these cocktails. But, you know, I flipped through them all. There's like serious booze in here. These are real cocktails. So
except for the minor threat one.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but if you make some, let me know what you think.
I'll take pictures. I'll try to do a month where I take pictures of everything and send it off to you and stuff. I try to focus on it. I've got so many of those drink books. I try to focus on one a month if I can. And then pandemic hit and I got all like, you know what? Let's just use up these random bottle of booze I have in my house and make shit up. Yeah. But this came along and I'm like, oh, punk rock and cocktails. It's been sitting here like staring at me for the last couple of weeks saying, make me. So you're putting it out. I'm excited that you did it. And you know, I think for Iggy Pop, you need to come up with another drink, but you need to use mezcal because mezcal tastes like gasoline. I love mezcal. That is my drink. Tastes like gasoline. And he's from Detroit. It's Motor City.
I love it.
So I'm like, that's going to be my suggestion to you. I don't have that kind of creativity, but do a mezcal one.
I love it. Maybe we'll
motor oil.
Yeah. We'll torch a lemon peel or an orange peel or something.
Something. Make it sledgy.
Fire.
Yeah. Totally. So do that one. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I'm like, do I have a connection to Iggy Pop? Because a friend of mine used to work for his label, but not anymore. But I always see pictures of him like hugging up on strangers in the street and all this stuff. I think
I might just have to run into him randomly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you'll be best friends. Yeah. All right. Well, before we sign off, let's tell everybody where they, you know, tell them where they can get the book, your Instagram, your podcast, all the links and info they need to know to track you down.
Cool. Well, as far as, you know, kind of the catch-all for finding out what I've got going on in my world on Instagram is Jesse Hubbard Cocktails. Mm-hmm. I post all the latest goings-ons with, you know, my book and the podcast and everything there. You can find the links to everything from there. But you can buy the book on Amazon, of course, mm-hmm. and through bibliopublishing.com. You know, I'm trying to get it in some record stores across the country as well. But for now, you know, anybody listening to this, just check it out on Amazon or Bibliopublishing. Yeah. That's the best way to get it. Or hit me up, you know, and sometimes people want me to sign a copy for them. And that's the way to do that.
I know. I'm like, I'm going to have to ship this back to you so you can sign it. Then you can ship it back to me.
I'll do it.
I've never been to Ohio. I'm like, I don't know when I would get there. I have a friend. You see one of my posters back there is the Afghan Wigs. That guy's a good friend.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one with the girl in the middle. He's always like, you got to come to Cincinnati. And I'm like, why? If you're not playing there, I don't know what I need to do there. But I've seen that I've had some New York friends that are like, yeah, you got to get to like Columbus. They say Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati are great places to open bars right now, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Columbus is a rad town and they're all great, but I think probably the cocktail scene in Columbus is the best of the bunch. I'm a little biased, but.
Well, no, yeah. I actually have a girlfriend. Well, she's from Columbus and she's always told me Columbus is a great town and she's always been really proud of it. She lives in the Bay Area now, but she was just like, it's a great town. And she said it's been changing a lot in the last 10 years in ways that she likes, good food, good drinks, good street culture, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's truth.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. So you're repping for Columbus today.
Repping Columbus, CBUS 614.
And what is the name of the bar people can find you at? Once people can find bars.
Yeah, Rye River Social.
There you go, Rye River Social. Cool. I think that's it. So thank you.
Yeah, really thank you so much.
A big thank you to Jesse for talking to us about punk rock and cocktails, as well as his time bartending and being a radio DJ. I can kind of relate to all of that stuff, but I don't think I could ever write a book. So thanks to him for doing so. You want to run out and grab it. It just came out, so he's making the circuit, at least on the podcasts and such. Maybe if the world opens up again, he will be able to do a book tour. In the meantime, you can follow him on Instagram, as he said, Jesse Hubbard Cocktails, and grab the book and rock out at home yourself. And of course, you want to check out his Spotify playlist, which I have posted on the Podomatic and Facebook pages. So go check that out or head on over to Shibi Mo on Spotify to see all of our fun playlists. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.